Welcome to another special episode of Life on the Road. I am Scott Bolwidge. This is Alfonso Key, and we are the navigators of the coaching journey, and we get a chance to take a deep dive into their coaching career. And our special guest today is the assistant coach at LSU, Tim Kaine. And Coach Key, give us a little background on Tim Kaine.
Well, he's a true old school coach. He has really started from the beginning, skipped no steps, started from D3, ended up in the SEC. So look forward to seeing how his life on the road coaching journey changed from universities to levels and also roles on staff.
Our special guest today is someone who Coach Key and I have known for many years. We started at the small college level in Greensboro, North Carolina. Now he is the assistant coach slash chief of staff with the LSU basketball program. Let's welcome Coach Tim Kaine to Life on the Road.
Coach, man, appreciate you guys having me on here, man. I'm glad to see you too. Blast from the past, and I love talking to it all the time.
Well, like I said, just like in the football, you see guys get drafted to quarterbacks and you project. I mean, I knew from day one that you had great, great future. So I'm glad you're where you're at now. Look forward to watching you have success.
No, I appreciate that. Really do.
So, you know, we'll get this thing started. I know you're a busy man. So first question is always the favorite one is, where was your first coaching job? And really, what made you want to get into coaching?
Yeah, my first coaching job wasn't in college. It was in high school. I coached at Northwestern High School in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Okay.
And I've got kind of different story. I played college basketball at Tennessee Martin and transferred to Winthrop to play basketball and soccer. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I was a much better soccer player than I was a basketball player. And so I was one of the top 50 guys in the country in soccer. So wow. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna try to play both. Cause I was like, man, I love them both. I love basketball more. It's my passion. And then it was crazy. My girlfriend at the time, I was finishing up school at Winthrop my last semester. And my girlfriend at the time was like, hey, they talked about they needed a high school coach for ninth grade. And I was like, at the time, I was just going to go get my MBA and just go in the business world. You know, I loved coaching all summer long. All I did was work boot camp. And yeah. I was there all summer working women's and men's. I loved it, and I knew it's something I always wanted to do. And since I was a kid, I wanted to coach. But I got the job at Northwestern High School, and that's where it all started.
Man, that's great. And so what was that first coaching experience like? So you were the head coach of the freshman team?
Yep. I was the head freshman coach.
So you get thrown right into the mix.
I got thrown right into the mix, and I got to tech my first game because I didn't put in the starters. I learned that lesson quick. Put in your names and then put in your starters, and it's not like I had an assistant or manager or anyone to help me.
Right.
And I'm sitting out there thinking I know everything, and I have no clue what I'm doing. But, I mean, it was an unbelievable experience. Mike Gossett was the coach then at Northwestern and Rock Hill. Gave me a chance, and he was unbelievable. He just poured into me and tried to help me to be the best I could be. And, you know, but gave me my freedom to coach the guys. I didn't have to run his offense. He gave me that freedom. Defensively, he wanted me to play man, which I was like, man, I'm not playing anything other than that. It was a great experience. I learned a lot of things from that experience, from obviously making sure I don't get a tech at the beginning of the game, making sure we have a bus driver, you know, all the things that you had to do. Make sure you carry the balls with you even on the road. And then also how to deal with parents, because I had a few of those that let me know what they felt.
Nothing changed. You know, all the coaches we've had thus far have a similar camp experience, putting in the work in the summertime, commissioner of camps and what have you. Now, that being your first job as a head man, did you have any philosophy offensively or defensively yet? Or were you just out there just trying things out?
I was just trying things out. I had no philosophy whatsoever. I was, you know, from when I played at Tennessee Martin and I played a little bit at Winthrop, I was using, you know, a little bit variation of the offense on that side. And then I'll be honest with you, one of the best plays I ran, I called it Kansas because I stole it from Kansas. And so, you know, I'm sitting there watching games. Hey, we all do it anyway now.
Yes, we do. Yeah, you change the name, though.
And at that time in high school, I can call it Kansas. You know, to them, that's the greatest thing. That's one lesson I learned at camp. Is to name your plays. If you're a high school, name after college and NBA. If you're in college, name them some NBA stuff. Even if you made it up, the players will start believing in it quicker.
Oh, no question.
Quick camp story. I had a coaching buddy of mine. He named his plays, his camp plays, after ex-girlfriends.
The problem is he might run out of girlfriends, man. He must not have ran a whole lot.
Right. I think he had about two, I think.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So after we run our course at the high school level, where's our next stop?
Yeah, I went to Austin Peay as a graduate assistant for Dave Luce and worked for him. That was 2003 was that year when I was with Dave Luce. And I got that job because I was working at Duke basketball camp. His son was there, Brad Luce, who is now, he just got on at Memphis as like a senior administrator and fundraising at Memphis. And he was at Missouri and he was an assistant in Missouri at one time. And there's an anti-nepotism law they didn't really know about in Tennessee. So he couldn't be the GA. So they were looking for one, and I happened to be there. I remember, like, it was yesterday. we were sitting there eating watermelon because the night before the last day at camp, you had watermelon at Duke camp.
Yeah.
We're sitting there eating. He's like, what are you thinking of doing? I said, man, I want to be a grad assistant. That's what I'm working towards. And I've reached out to a bunch of people. He's like, well, hey, man, I'm going to call my dad tonight. He called his dad, and I ended up getting the job like two days later.
That is phenomenal. And then, I'm almost in the old school phase of my career, but, I'm still fly. But I tell young guys getting in that everything you do is evaluated, So when you work at camp, that is the most impressionable. It's the best way. It's the resume builder, and you're getting evaluated. So everything counts. I'm talking being early, doing the small things, sweeping, teaching stations with the young kids where you all hide from, those things. So just thinking how camp, it's not a matter of resume getting your job. It's a matter of when you have an opportunity to have an impression, do things the right way at elite level.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think that's the one thing this generation and even probably out to 10 years ago has missed out on is working camp at a young age. Like to me, that's what made me a better coach.
And no I think question.
When you listen to Coach K and Calipari and Hubie Brown, they all worked 5-star. Rick Pitino. Like that's where they got to sit and grow as coaches because it wasn't just sitting behind a screen and saying, oh, this is what I'm going to run. No, they got to actually try it.
Yes.
And they got to fail and they got to succeed and see what worked and how they spoke to players and what worked.
No question.
Absolutely. And so now we're at the college level as a grad assistant. How was that transition? So you have some coaching under your belt. Now we go into a different side of the coaching because I'm sure you weren't doing a lot of on the court stuff, more off the court. So what was that transition like?
Yeah, the crazy part with that job is they did not have a third assistant. So I was the third assistant. Yes. I didn't go recruiting. I didn't do anything that I didn't, I took the recruiting test, but he was like, he didn't want to send me out on the road, especially as a graduate assistant. And I got my degree in 9 months. Okay. And so it was a 1-year deal. But I ran all the individual workouts when the coaches were out on the road.
Wow.
From like the get-go. And so for me, it was an unreal experience. I got to sit there and run individual workouts. And obviously I was young. I had just finished playing. I just finished college. So I could relate to the guys. But I also was mature enough to know like, hey, I'm one of their coaches now. I'm not, I can be their buddy as a GA more so than an assistant. Mm-hmm. But there's also a line that, you have to sit there and make sure you don't cross as a GA.
Right. That's the tough part that I think young coaches have a hard time adjusting to is being that coach, not the player. If you're fresh off the court and you still think you can hoop a little bit. So your mentality is definitely different. So that's definitely a tough adjustment. And how long were you at Austin Peay for?
9 months. I was there 9 months and I was blessed enough. We made the NCAA tournament when I was there. First game we played at the Pyramid and we beat Memphis after they had just beaten Syracuse in the Garden in the preseason. It wasn't NIT, but it was a preseason event. And Memphis had just beaten that. And that was the year Syracuse won it all with Carmelo. So that was Carmelo's first game.
Wow.
One, I'm dating myself. But two, my first game as a college coach, as a GA, we beat Memphis in the Pyramid.
And that Final Four, was that in New Orleans that year? Did they win in New Orleans?
Yes, yeah. It was in New Orleans.
I remember the Final Four. I don't know if you were there at that time.
I was.
But yeah, okay. I was there too when it was classic, Canal Street. But I remember just at the Final Four in New Orleans because I was out one evening eating dinner, maybe, and I saw Carmelo Anthony out. And I'm thinking, why is he out so late? learned a great lesson. Jimmy's and Joe's, okay, because he did an unbelievable job. I remember walking down it was Canal Street of Bourbon and saw him out there.
Yeah, some guys can do that, some can't.
Yes.
you're right about that. I think my first Final Four in Tampa, after Duke won the semifinals, I saw everyone in Ybor City after that, and then UConn gets them in the championship game. So I wonder if that had anything to do with that.
No question.
Yeah.
So after Austin Peay, where do we go from Austin Peay?
Yeah, I go to Guilford College where we met in Greensboro, North Carolina. Sir. Yeah, I was with Tom Palumbo, who's still there. It was his first year. And we talk about like camp and how it gets you jobs. Well, they called the office. Coach Palumbo was new. He had just come from Defiance in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was new, didn't know anyone in North Carolina. And he called the Duke office. And I think the Carolina and the NC State office, like, hey, do you have any, you know, young coaches that you would recommend? And the secretary recommended me.
Wow.
And mentioned my name. And so he reaches out to me. And I get an interview. It was three of us that interviewed. And I remember one of them ended up becoming a Division III head coach who was a West Point grad who knew my brother because my brother went there. And they knew each other from the Army. And I ended up getting it. And he probably wouldn't admit this, and he probably still can't. He told me at the end, he goes, you got this job because you don't have a girlfriend. And he goes, and you're young, and I know you're going to live and just recruit all day long.
Think about how times have changed. Now you say that right now, they'll fire you and you'll be having marches going on. Yeah. Coach Burke told me at Chawan, I was at Chawan 2000 and I had just recently been married and family. Mm-hmm. And he said, usually I don't marry coaches that have families because of that. But you're an exception. And met my wife and said, he'd be married to me during the season.
Yeah.
He was right. No question. When you were at Guilford, I think I might have been at A&T at the time.
I believe so.
I think so.
Yeah, that was 03-04.
Yeah. Small world. Yep.
You guys were good. Like, you had some talent there. Because how many years were there? Because you went to the Final Four, is that correct?
Yeah, I was already left by then. I helped. You know, my claim to fame is I helped recruit Ben Strong, who is the Division III National Player of the Year.
How did
he's
you
a bad man.
Yes, he.
So it's Caleb Kimbrough, who I actually spoke to earlier today, is the head coach at Hampton Sydney now.
Okay.
And Caleb and him were best friends, and so we knew they wanted to play together. And then the one thing with Ben, I'll never forget it. Coach McMahon called me when he was at App State because he was there for 14 years. He played four and was coaching there 10. And he calls me. He's like, hey, that Ben Strong kid, like, what do you think? And I was like, man. I said, his name's deceiving because he's not strong right now. I remember saying that to him. I said,
that's a great line.
If we went by his name, I was like, Coach, I said, he's going to have to redshirt or sit out. He won't be able to compete for you guys right away.
Right.
And the scariest part of that whole deal was Ben committed to us, Caleb. They paid. I remember he paid his dorm fee. That was the thing in D3, man.
That's your commitment.
You know, you were like, we got him. And the crazy part is in the summer, he goes down to Orlando and plays with the Durham Disciples.
Ooh,
and he's playing a
Matt Reed. Is that Matt Reed?
I think so.
Yeah. And this was that summer of, was that 04? And I'm sitting down there and I remember I'm leaning. And one of the Ivy League guys goes to me, some other coach said, man, who's that 6'9 kid? Like, he's good. He's not signed anywhere. And I turn around and I look, I go, nah, he signed with us in Guilford. And like that. And he said he just wanted to get some extra work in. And the Ivy League coach. Yeah, but the crazy part is, you know, most of those guys didn't know they couldn't sign D3. If they had never played or been around, they had no clue.
The Ivy League
coach turns to me and goes, I'm not going to say anything. But he goes, good job saying that, because I already know we can't get him into school. He goes, but if I could, I'd be trying to get him into school. Yeah.
And no NLIs.
Nah, there was none of that. Yeah. So he ended up obviously coming and really helping that program get to where it's been. And I took my wife when we were dating. She was in D.C. and they played at Virginia Wesleyan in the NCAA tournament. And then I think he had 52 and 18 in a game against Lincoln out of Philly, and they won in triple overtime.
Wow.
And I might be a little off with those numbers, but it's not far off.
Like, they are grand numbers.
Oof, my wife is like, why did you leave here? Like, this dude's unbelievable.
You know, that team, I think the next year would have been my first year at A&T, and they came to scrimmage us.
Oh,
and, man, I'll tell you off the after the show what Coach E has called our bigs.
Yes. Man, I remember like I was just, you're right.
Ben did to our bigs.
Very descriptive. Man,
he was a monster.
Yeah.
So, you know, and for the people who don't know, the commitment, the I'm 100% committed at the Division III level nowadays, when they put that on social media, if you haven't paid that dorm fee, you are not 100% committed
at all.
Hey, can you guys both imagine if he played in this era, how fast he would be gone? How fast he'd be gone? How many people with anything as far as, oh, he's not he's eligible for us. He's not committed. Yeah. Can you imagine the transfer opportunities he would have this day and age?
Oh, it'd be unbelievable. But when we say that, his career wouldn't end up the way it would have, most likely, because he got to play early, play right away, and develop, and got all that time on the court.
No question.
Because I've talked to him about it. I mean, shoot, you know, when the Suns made the finals, he was their he was one of their coaches.
Wow.
Wow.
He was on staff there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He was their player development coach. And then he was also, because when they came and played Ja in Memphis at the beginning of the season, before ours started in early November, I went and saw him.
Okay.
Yeah, because that was Ja's rookie year. So I got to see Ja, and I got to see him at one time. And he came and met with my family and stuff. So, I mean, yeah, man, unbelievable human being.
Unbelievable story.
That's great. Yeah. So what made you decide to leave Guilford? So you're building that program. You're helping build that program. Now, all of a sudden, you know, what job pulled you away from Guilford?
Yeah, and it was crazy because I visited there in the spring, and I remember coming back and telling Coach Palumbo, I was like, man, I went to this Newberry College because they had like a South Carolina All-Star workout, and I went there to see kids because, as you know, at D3, you just go see every kid. There are no rules. You can go wherever you want.
Everybody.
And it's great because you get to – that's where you cut your teeth, and you get to learn how to actually recruit and then start to evaluate.
Yep.
And I went to Newberry, and I remember I came back. I said, man, there's a graveyard on the campus, like right next to it. And I was like, you know, I was kind of like that. Well, then Sean Golden, who was the assistant at Winthrop University, got the head job at Newberry. And then he called me at the shoot. It was in August when I left.
Wow,
he calls me in August. Yeah, it was late. And he calls me. He's like, hey, man, you want to come with me? And I love Palumbo. I loved Green. I knew we were going to have a really good team coming, but I sat there and thought about it. He's a guy who's been at the Division I level. He was a McDonald's All-American. He played at Georgia. He was SEC Defensive Player of the Year. I know him really well, and I knew he would have a chance to move on, and a guy I trusted, so I ended up going there with him.
Because you said – I'm sorry. You see, he said one thing. We all had D3 roots, but it wasn't amazing back then. When it wasn't a dead period or a non-contact like D3, like, you know, D2, I went from D3 to D2, D1 in 3 years consecutive. I remember, like, there was no downtime. We had to call every day. We could contact anybody. I was so glad. And next level said, well, this is a dead period. This is a non-contact period. This is a quiet period. I was so with D3. It was nothing. Every day through Sunday, I could call and go to every event. Don't worry about NCAA certified at all.
Yeah.
It was like the wild, wild west. But like you said, great point starting out.
Oh, man, because D2, D1, you could call once a week. That was it.
Couldn't wait to do that.
And then I'll never forget, we had the Nextel phones that had the walkie-talkie aspect to it. So if Coach wanted to call me before 9, because, you know, at 9, that's when I could make calls because it was free. And then I think like halfway through the year, it moved to 7 o'clock, but he would hit me on that walkie-talkie. I'd be in my apartment or out getting something to eat, and I hear, ring, ring, ring. I'm like, what's up, Coach? He's like, hey, have you called this kid? We ended up having 8 seniors my first year that we had to replace.
Okay. Wow.
And so, I mean, I put 25,000 miles on my car.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah.
And I used to rent a car once in a blue moon, but it was just going from Charlotte to Virginia to Charlottesville to.
People have no idea just, that grind from the mud. My first D3 job, I had an Xterra. It was leased. I paid off like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Shoot, I had an Xterra too. So it must have been the D3 thing.
And how is that? So you know, we talk about that transition, mm-hmm. and now you're starting to recruit a different type of player. Mm-hmm. So talk about that transition from the D3 to D2. You know, you talked about the recruiting and everything.
Yeah.
You know, what other adjustments did you have to make moving up one level?
Yeah, you know, moving up level up, you have the scholarships. D3, you could recruit at mass and just try to get guys and just try to get them in. And you know, we would sell Guilford's Academics, obviously, being in Greensboro, North Carolina, a great spot. And what we used to sell on them, too, honestly, was you're not just going to Guilford. You can go to UNCG because you can take classes there. You can take classes at A&T. We're like, hey, man, you come here, you can go to multiple colleges.
That's good.
I'm a young guy. I'm like, hey, man, that means more women you get to meet. It broadens your horizons.
Chances, more FGAs. We'll go to 10.
And so then I go to Newberry, where obviously we're limited on our scholarships and how we have to break them down. You have your matrix of, you know, you get leadership money, you get church money. If we got a kid from the state of South Carolina who was a JUCO transfer, his first year he got $3,500. But his senior year, he'd got nothing. So they basically, and then you had to figure out how am I going to make up that $3,500 to senior, especially if he's good.
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
And so having to do all that. And then the other thing was Guilford was more of an academic institution, not that Newberry wasn't, but it was more known for academics and in the city, whereas Newberry was rural and it was even smaller school than Guilford.
Okay.
So having to do that. Plus recruiting the JUCO ranks, which, you know, in Division III, you can a little bit. We had actually Shimon Williams' brother, Eric Williams, in Guilford, who played at a JUCO North in Carolina. Georgia. Yeah. And he's from Greenville, South Carolina. And so we had him. He was the only JUCO, you know, guy. Whereas at Newberry, we were bringing in half our team was junior college.
Right. Got to know your niche.
You have to know your niche. And then you also have to know if they didn't have over a 2, you know, a 2.5 or a 2.0. They had to be D2 or they didn't have their hours and they didn't graduate. So I was looking for that kid that didn't graduate.
Hey, you can't wait. Say, hey, man, I got some good news and bad news. The good news is coming to us. The bad news, you can't play at that level. You got to come to us. You're kind of trapped.
Yeah. Whereas Guilford, I was like, hey, I need to make sure he's a high academic guy. Yeah. Well, I was looking for a guy, not to say he was low academic, but he wasn't high enough to qualify for Division I.
Right down your alley.
And then I had to look at, you know, all my buddies are in Division I. You had to call them for the Mullins report to see all the kids from South Carolina so I could recruit every kid.
You're taking me back. You said Mullins report. Wow. Mullins, big ball. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, it's crazy to think about all the different angles that people don't even truly understand. You know, when you're trying to put together a team, you know, the JUCO, the having a perfect GPA.
Yes.
Not too low, but not too high.
Yeah.
You know, the financial status, like so many things come into play.
And you're sitting there hoping IRS, like, man, okay, good player, but let's hope it's single parent. Yes. Okay. Yes. Got a chance. Financial aid, go to the house. Oh, nah, we can't get him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Oh, you know, too much. So all of the perfect kids. And then people have no idea what you're doing behind the scenes to find that perfect match.
Yeah, I had a kid at Chihuahua and I took him to the financial aid office and the dad was like, I don't really need to fill this out. And he gets to the part where you're filling in the income part and it was all nines. So he was making well above whatever the maximum number was.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm just kind of wasting my time here because we're not going to walk lines for anything.
Which isn't always a bad thing because sometimes that helps you.
Yeah, it does.
Right.
It does.
Right.
I was there for 3 years. So I was there with Coach Golden for 3 years, you know, learned a ton there. And once again, I was the only assistant. So I was the recruiting coordinator. I was, I washed laundry. I would mop the floor. I remember before our second home game, mopping our floor with an old school mop and bucket. Because they had PE class in the mornings there, and there was gum on the court, and it was nasty.
Yeah.
And I asked the people that worked there, and they're like, no, that's not our job. We just do the offices.
They probably said, like, it quickly, don't not my job. They'll define real quick.
Yeah. And so I had to go out there and I'm mopping. I'll never forget, like, the football coaches come like walking in, they're like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I said, I'm mopping the floor. Like why? I said, like, because it's got to get done. Mm-hmm. I was like, you want to do done. It? And then them dudes just skirted off and said
quickly.
Nothing.
Quickly. Yeah. Isn't it funny, guys, when you first got into the business and you're out, you know, and the optics come see a game or at a camp, you're sitting there and you have someone say, hey, man, can you put me on, man? I want to coach. I want to get on, man. I want to coach at that level, big dog. I'm like, man, I just taught a racquetball class. I got cussed out for some socks. I didn't mop the floor. I put the bleachers up. And then I had to check classes. And they have no idea the majority of the iceberg was going on. They said, come on, put me on, kid. Man, you don't want this. You don't want
I was
this.
The head cross country coach. I started the program at Guilford and left.
Your founder.
And then at Newberry, I was the head Newberry cross country coach.
Charter member, man.
We practiced every morning at 6 a.m. so that I could get to basketball after. I was a great driver. I could drive that van now. And I always, every one of my trips was within an hour and a half, never more. The furthest I went was Spartanburg, South Carolina.
A van with no seat belts. We won't talk anymore. We just drove. Been there, done that as well.
Now, what pulls us away from Newberry? So we spent 3 years there. Where do we go from Newberry?
Yep. I ended up being fortunate enough as Randy Peel became the head coach at Winthrop when Greg Marshall ended up going to Wichita State. Mm-hmm. Well, Coach Peel was always on the road. Like, does anyone know Randy Peel?
Yes.
He's intensely
on the road with a program in his hand. He's always,
in a notepad.
Always.
He's writing. I can't imagine how many trees, it's forests are gone from as many notebooks as he's written in.
I don't know where he's at right now, but he's on the road somewhere.
I do. Yeah. He's at Missouri State because I talked to him this week.
Okay.
He's there working for Dana. And we were talking hoops and talking, you know, scheduling and scouting. He's the best. And so it was crazy. So he got the job. That was right after Greg left.
Right.
And then I went and interviewed with him. I officially didn't get offered the job until like July, but I was there from basically March, the end of March, April, May, June. I ran the camps the whole time. And then I shared office with Marty McGillin because Marty would be like, he's just like, man, he just needs to offer you the job. Like, man, you're doing everything. and I was still being paid. Thank goodness they paid me till the end of June at Newberry.
Okay.
And so I got paid till the end of June so I could afford to do it. And I live with my college roommate at his house, and I was paying like maybe $180 a month.
Life on the road.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal.
And I was living in his guest room, and he was a high school coach and a teacher in Rock Hill at Northwestern. And I was living with him and was the director of basketball operations, actually, at Winthrop. So I got to learn that side at the Division I level. So I was the video coordinator because, you know, you didn't have one back then. Yep. I had done that as a GA. I had done that at D2 and D3. So for me, I just walked in like, all right, this is easy. Like, this, I'm the coach too on top of this. Like, yeah, I got this. Like, whatever. And so for me, because I had done all that work at the lower levels, which was great. It taught me how to do those things. And I learned most of them on my own because you learn from trial and error and things you need to get done. And like I said, getting a tech the first time in high school,
no question.
Like learning from those mistakes you made to where I got there, I was more prepared and I was ready, you know, to help the program. And I was fortunate enough there. We made the NCAA tournament that first year with Coach Peel. And I mean, the staff had Larry Dixon. He's at NC State.
Yeah.
You know, Marty McGill, I just mentioned him. Yeah. He's associate head coach at Longwood. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Paul Molinari, he's up at, where's he at? Oh, man. I went blank on where he's at. No, I know where he's at. The Penguins. Youngstown State. State. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And so we're now back at the Division I level. How many years, let's count, how many years did it take you to get back, you know, get to that Division I level? So
it was 4 years. So
4 years?
Yeah, 4 years to get back to that Division I level.
And think about, like you said, all of the lessons that you learned at the smaller colleges when you don't have that staff, you know, where you have to do it on your own. And like you said, you get to that job and you're like, oh, this is it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, this is a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And but people, I think younger kids and aspiring coaches, they want to just get straight to the limelight.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the doing process. The things at the small college level makes such a difference in building that character to when you get that call to no matter what position you would have been offered at Winthrop, you were ready.
Yeah.
And the one thing it teaches you too is because a lot of guys, like you've said, they want, oh man, I want to be a coach. It looks great. It looks all that.
Right.
I got to find out. I got to question myself a couple of times, looking in that mirror. It's like, is this really what you want?
Oh no. If you didn't question yourself, you're not a coach.
Yeah. And you just look to yourself in the mirror. Some days it'd be Thanksgiving. You'd be by yourself.
Yep.
And you just, you know, single, like you have a girl, you had nothing. You just be like, man, this is it.
All right. That means you're on your way. And logically, whatever your background is academically, mathematically, financially, logically, it makes no sense to basketball mobility. I was telling the story. I mean, I went from, I think, 3.5 jobs at a junior high school, head coach, assistant football coach, head baseball coach, weekend group home, $28,000-$30,000 wife with benefits, happily, ecstatically took Tawan job, 10 months, $800 a month, no benefits, nowhere to live, stayed in the dorm, won McDonald's. And I was like ecstatic, but it made no sense to the common person. You leaving a job that has teaching, education, you have medical benefits, you're going to Murfreesboro, North Carolina with one McDonald's, $800 a month, no benefits, 10 month. That's where I started.
Yeah. My wife told me when we were met, she was a pharmaceutical rep, so she was doing all right for herself. And she goes, how much are you making? I told her, and she was like, you know you can make more at McDonald's for the hour.
Right? Oh, no question.
I was,
now,
was
labor
like,
laws
that,
in trouble.
Right?
Now, this day and age, they would have all been locked up.
Oh, man. She was like, you know that, right? And I was like, yeah, I don't care. That's not what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Like, that's not why I'm here.
And no. Tim, I had me a nice Converse polo at Tawan. I didn't say it wasn't Nike. It wasn't these. Are we one of the last schools in America? Converse white polo. I wore it every third day. Couldn't wait. I had my notebook. Hey, I was in hog heaven.
Was that when D Wade wore Converse for like a day?
That was hey, I've had to wear LeVar Ball's gear, man. I just wanted me a golf shirt, man. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
That was definitely way before D Wade.
Yeah.
Now we're at Winthrop. You know, we're experiencing a lot of success. And where do we go after Winthrop?
I ended up going to – I stayed 1 year at Winthrop.
Okay.
And ended up going to Florida Atlantic University with Mike Jarvis. And I was there for 6 years at Florida Atlantic.
Okay. Beautiful and scenery. How was that? We all know the – the living down there in Boca is a lot different and sunny year round. And, you know, the living is great. You know, how was the coaching? And now you're working for a legend in the coaching business.
Yeah, no doubt. Working for a legend, blessed to be there. You know, I say that and I was living in Boca Raton making $30,000 and I think at the time I was 30 or 31. So like I was getting close to my age, at least I was moving up in the world.
Yeah. No, the salary is good. Just the location is kind of pricey.
I did not live in Boca. I live a little outside of Boca. I will say I had a roommate who was a baseball coach. Who's now a junior college head baseball coach slash like assistant AD. And I'll never forget. We're sitting there. And he's watching Cops, and he goes, "Hey man, isn't that the Exxon right across the street from our apartment complex?" And I was like, "Yes, it is." And they was on Cops that day.
The first time in history.
Yeah, that tells you. You know, I was living fine. I was okay, but it wasn't the greatest place. But you know, the chance to be a Division I assistant for a legend like Mike Jarvis. Obviously, I'd been in Naples, Florida. That's where my grandparents had a place, but I'd never been to Boca. I'd heard about it.
Right.
And I mean, I'll never forget driving down. I was like, whoa, this is ridiculous. Like I was like an innocent fawn who left Newberry College. I was in Newberry less than 2 years prior.
Wow. Which,
No offense to Newberry. There's not a whole lot there. I'm not going to talk bad about it, but not a whole lot there. I go to Rock Hill, South Carolina, which was a move up in the game.
Right.
And many moving better. And where you're living and you're at Winthrop. And then all of a sudden you're at Florida Atlantic and beautiful campus, you know, and I was actually down there this May. We went on vacation because my youngest daughter, or my oldest daughter, was born there. And my wife still calls it home. She loves it there. So we always go down, and we went back in the offices. They hadn't changed much since I was there.
Wow.
And that's not a good thing. And they made the Final Four. Like, people have no idea what
that's
they
phenomenal.
Did.
Yeah.
With what they have.
Yes.
They have zero clue. Like, none. Like, is it better financially than when I was there? It's a million times better. Like, the pay for coaches, all that stuff. But their facilities haven't really changed.
That's amazing.
And now they're going to be in the AAC, and they're changing them now. They're doing some things. So, I mean, it was great to see them. But, like, my daughter walked in the office. Obviously, at Murray State, we had big-time facilities. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, we're in the SEC. You got great facilities. And my daughter was like, this is it? They went to a Final Four? You know, she's 10 years old, you know.
She gets it. I'll
the darndest thing kids say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but, yeah, she knows.
We were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was the challenge when you got there is – they had never had a winning record, like, historically. Mm-hmm. I know they had been to one NCAA tournament, and that was in 2001, I believe, they went. And I got there in 08. So, you know, it wasn't that far removed, but it was far enough. And they had only been Division One for probably 20 years at the time.
That's a short period of time.
And they had just added football probably 3 years prior. So, you know, all that money went to football.
No question.
And they're trying to build – and they had Howard Schnellenberger as the head coach. So everything was about football. And they were trying to build a football stadium. So all the money was going to that.
Yep.
So there was those challenges that were faced with that. But, I mean, our third year there, we won the league, regular season.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2011. And did it with, I think it was 8 or 9 kids from the state of Florida. And we sold them on staying home.
Right.
And it really helped, too. Florida was rolling, obviously, at the time.
Yeah. Yep.
And Kenny Boynton decided to go to Florida over Duke, which, you know, I'm a Duke guy, but, you know, for me, in my heart, I wanted him to go to Duke. But then when he went to Florida, I was like, well, this helps us because we're
with
some of his teammates, and they wanted to stay in the state, and they did stay.
That was a big
deal. They were in his class. So, I mean, that helped us. I mean, we had Brett Comer signed with us, who was at Florida Gulf Coast, Stephon Moody, who was all league in the SEC. He was with us. I mean, we had Greg Gantz, the all-time leading scorer. While I was there, we had the all-time leading scorer, all-time leading shot blocker, and all-time leading assist, and they're still that there.
Wow.
And so we helped, you know, get some guys, and at the end it just kind of fell apart. But, you know, great learning lessons for me there working for Mike Jarvis.
That's phenomenal.
And being around him every day. So, I mean, I've been beyond blessed to be around the coaches that I've been around.
Oh, definitely. And that takes us to – we're getting closer to – to where we're at now. So next stop, we're in beautiful sunny Boca.
Yes.
And now we go to, is Murray State next on the list?
No, it's Statesboro, Georgia.
Oh, that's
Georgia Southern.
I was there for one year. I took that stop 14-15 and worked for Mark Byington, who I love. And I went back. So Larry Dixon helped me with that because of my relationship with him.
Yeah.
And so it was Larry Dixon, Andrew Wilson, and myself, and Randy Peel was the assistant who left to go to Tennessee State with Dana.
Yep.
Okay.
And so I got the job because he left to go to Tennessee State. So the guy I worked for leaves to take another job, and I get fortunate enough to fill in where he left.
It's amazing because, you know, your coaching circle, your coaching tree that you're a part of is kind of keeping you intact. Because you were with Larry Dixon at Winthrop, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm sure he helps with getting you to Georgia Southern, and I'm sure Randy Peel was the same way. So it's just amazing, you know, building those relationships, how it just continues to help you along the way.
Yeah, it was huge. And then in recruiting, what helped me was, I'll never forget a kid, DeMonte Simpson from Bearden High School, College of Charleston was recruiting him. And Mark Byington was the lead recruiter at the time as he was an assistant for Cremins.
Mm-hmm.
And so he and I were recruiting some of the same guys. And so we kind of got to know each other through that. And so there became a respect level, as we know, when you start recruiting against guys, the ones that do it the right way, you're like, man, that guy's pretty good. Like,
no question.
It's not going to be easy to, you know, you're not beating them out but, you know, in your mind you are. You're like, oh, we beat that guy out because you're competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And just having that relationship, and he knew McMahon really well, who, you know, Coach Amanda will get to later, but we grew up together. So, you know, all those things kind of played in with that. And Andrew Wilson, I didn't really know very well, who's now one of my best friends.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And now, so now we get to Murray State.
Yes. Now we get to Murray State. So Coach McMahon gets the job and calls me and says, come on, let's go. So I took my wife from Boca to Statesboro to Murray, Kentucky.
Oh, man. You are definitely.
My oldest daughter wasn't even three yet, and she lived in Boca Raton, Statesboro, and Murray, Kentucky.
Well, at least she was young enough not to remember the Statesboro, and you know, I'm sure she remembers Murray, Kentucky a little bit better. But
yeah. And Coach Bowers does not represent the entirety of life on the road perspective on geography. He's a northerner.
Yeah, it's all right, man. You know, in Jersey, right?
Yeah. It's a little different, you know. Those small country towns.
Yeah. You know? Tweet him, not Coach Key, Coach Bowen. Yeah.
Hey, I'm not saying anything wrong. They're great people there. I'm sure. Yes. Everywhere you've gone, you know, and that's the one thing I will say, you know, when you're at those small college towns, how the people in the town kind of pull and support, you know, the programs there.
No, it's unbelievable. That's the lifeblood of those programs is the people like that. Like at Murray State, I was there 7 years, and we would play our conference tournaments in Evansville, which is about 2 to 2.5 hours away. We'd have 9,000-10,000 people there. There's only like 15,000 people in the whole town.
Wow.
So like when I say like they embrace the program and you, and now there were times they didn't embrace us. They embraced me, but they weren't embracing me. They were hoping I left. Our first 2 years, but we took over a program that obviously it just had Cameron Payne drafted lottery.
Yes.
Sophomore. And so, and then we got fortunate enough and got John Morant. The rest is history from there. Yes. But you know, that was the lifeblood with the people in the town.
No.
And that's why they've been good for so long.
Right. And that's one thing you can, you know, we would go play when we were at A&T, you know, we would play Dayton. And there's not much going on in Dayton, but 15,000-16,000 every night.
In
Dayton, you know, so I'm sure, you know, Murray State was the same way. And, you know, where were you at on the coaching totem pole at Murray State?
Yeah, I was an assistant coach there for those 7 years that I was at Murray State. So I was on the road recruiting, and I mean, being able to represent a program like that.
Yes.
And, you know, I talked about Coach McMahon and our history. We grew up together. I've known him since I was 5 years old.
Okay.
He went to play at App State. I go to Tennessee Martin and then Winthrop. And then we were both crazy enough to get into coaching. And he got the job. And I was fortunate enough, you know, he believed in me from what other people have told him, not just our friendship.
No question.
That I've worked with, that he said, hey, man, everyone I'm bowed. It's like, man, you work your tail off. Like, you do a good job. And he also said that he knows I know how to do everything because I've been at every level.
Yes. Yeah. Jack of all trades.
Yeah.
So, and this takes us to an important part, because now you go from Murray State as an assistant coach, and, you know, your role changes, you know, because you go from being on the road, and you're off the road right now, correct, at LSU?
Yeah.
Okay.
My title changed this year that I'm an assistant coach, so I can coach now on the floor.
Okay. Awesome. How was that? You know, you're heavily involved in the program on the recruiting side, and you know, you get, you know, the coaching change and at LSU, you know, when he approaches you about coming, but not in that same capacity, you know, how was that for you? And, you know, was it a tough decision to go to LSU because your role was going to change?
Yeah, it wasn't a tough decision to go to LSU and to work for Coach McMahon, because I know what he's about and the kind of man he is and the vision he has for the program. And obviously I helped build that at Murray State with him. So it wasn't a tough decision. Am I going to sit here and say I was like, oh, yeah, great, you know? No, but, you know, I'm a big boy. I've been at every level. I'm sitting there. I'm a guy right now talking who coached in the ODAC and the SAC conference, who's now in the SEC.
Yes.
Like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, like, I mean, the next league is the NBA. Like,
yep.
So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, were you disappointed at times? Yeah. You know, it's just part of life.
Yep.
But that, just like we talked about the disappointments you have at every level,
yep,
from losing to things you learn, It's more, I just thought of it as, for me, I can keep growing.
No question.
Now I can learn at the highest level how you run a program, because I'm helping run the program.
No question.
And now I meet with the administrators every day. I'm the one on emails. I mean, just earlier when the guys came in here asking about our GIST play, and then we're doing something else that does with mental with strength and mental coaching for our guys. So I'm learning, I mean, not just basketball. I'm all encompassed how to run a program. And then you sit there and think, I'm 45 years old now. You get older, you know, and you sit there and coaching's tough. I mean, it is tough. Yep. You've been a head coach.
Yep.
Man, as you get older and you become, I mean, it is. Yep. And all they want is young guys. That's what they are. But yet they want the experience. Then when have some experience, they're like, oh, man, you just got a little too much experience. Like someone's always going to find an issue. We've all heard it before. When young, you don't have enough. When you're older, you have too much.
Yeah,
like, oh, I can't pay you that, man. You wouldn't take that. And you're like, well,
yeah, I heard it all the time. But the good news is this unpredictability in this profession is when you're just in the right place around the environment, you know, guys – take a job here, guys move. So it's always a domino, but it's not always unilateral. Mm-hmm. It's just a surprise. So long as you're in the house, around the table, that chair. And for you, because you're being humble, you're an elite recruiter. I remember reading some things about this. So you've kind of conquered that area. And for your next move, kind of be hands-on with the program leading, I think it balances you even more than you were just on that road.
Yeah, I think that's what I had to look at it as. And I want to be the most elite that I can be at whatever I do, whether it's an assistant, whether it's a father, husband, you know, those things that you want to be, you want to try to be the best you can be. And the other thing I sat there, like I said, I'm 45. Well, if I'm 55 and I'm sitting there like, man, no one wants to hire me.
Right.
Well, I've been working at the highest level with administrators who might be an AD now at another high major or at a mid-major. That they're like, hey, man, you did an unbelievable job. You really know how to run a program. Yes. I want to bring you in and hire you as my assistant AD. So you have to, you know, it's making sure you have a lot more than just being a coach. Because obviously it's great. It's the greatest thing I've ever done. It's the most rewarding thing I could ever do other than being a father and a husband.
No question.
But it helps me round my resume to say, hey, I have this experience at this level. Like, not many people can say that on this planet. And I know that. Like, I'm beyond blessed.
No question. Top of the food chain.
You know, and the reason why I ask that is because you have – a lot of coaches out there that think of taking a step down like that, you know, you were, you know, part of the success and the reason why Murray State was so successful. And now you're asked to kind of take a step back. And some coaches, you know, may take offense to it. Like, well, I did all of this, you know, I shouldn't be taking that step back, but you definitely explained, you know, the big picture of things. And seeing things beyond the actual recruiting and the coaching side of it, there's so much more out there besides, you know, in the athletic world.
Yes.
That you're seeing that, you know, possibly one day, you know, we ain't coaching forever.
No.
Yeah.
But so now you're actually really setting yourself up, like you said, for that next step. Mm-hmm. So I think people really should pay attention to that and look at the big picture sometimes. And it's more about the long game instead of just that short game.
But you've been successful, I'm sorry, either way. And the only step back is a regular job. You know what I'm saying? That's a step back. And we talk about the numbers of athletes going from high school to college, and which is documented 1.9 or 2 points, wherever you look at. But I think another stat that is overlooked is the amount of want to be college coaches that will never step set. If it's an AAU coach, if it's a high school, if it's a JV, if it's a private, most people will not get a chance to coach in college, and by far, definitely not in the SEC. So, I mean, you've done phenomenal, and I'm excited about your future. Which lead me to my next question. When that dream job comes, as you prepare all aspects of the program, would like for you to think about your ultimate coaching staff and best of your ability. You have a lot of people, you know, we kind of proceeded with calling no disrespect, ultimate coaching staff, no shade coaching staff. But if you can break it down to four areas with your offensive coordinator, with someone that had that acumen, defensive coordinator, recruiting coordinator, and associate head coach that can kind of be there in every level without putting you in that. So let's talk about what your offensive coordinator and your ultimate ultimate dream staff.
Yeah, offensive coordinator. I mean, I'm working with a guy right now who's a genius, Cody Toppard. I mean, a lot of people know about him in the coaching tree and know in the coaching world. Like, he, offensively, I mean, he's elite. I mean, coaching the NBA, he's coached at the highest level. He's a guy who's brought a lot to our table. And, you know, he's a guy you sit there and you're like, man, hell, I wish I knew as much as he did. I've been this long. Like, you know, for me, I was a D2, D3, like, and he was a guy who's an Ivy League guy. And, I mean, he's really super smart, knows the offensive game. He would be a guy, you know, obviously you'd love. Defensive coordinator, my guy, Andrew Wilson. Okay. Yeah, at James Madison. He was at James Madison, and now he's the head coach at VMI. And I want to take him from a head coach VMI job. But, you know, you want to snatch some head coaches to work for you too, you know. And so, you know, that'd be a guy. He was the defensive coordinator. Actually, when we played James Madison, did a great job in the first half. I mean, they killed us at Murray. They were just there playing off guys. And then we figured it out. And then we ended up winning, you know. And he was like, I knew you'd figure it out at some point. I got too many good coaches. He was being nice, but I was like, you know, and we had really good team and great players. So, and that was the year we went 31-3. Wow. So, and I've known him and really respect him and what he does. Recruiting coordinator. My man LD. I grabbed my man LD. You know, and there's another one. I don't know.
You're the man. LD,
but I'm gonna go my man Andre Gray. I love my man Andre Gray. That's my dude now.
He's come up Andre a couple times.
He and I came up. We worked Duke Camp together.
Yeah.
Then he went to Methodist. I went to Guilford College. Yep. He went to Wingate. I went to Newberry. He went to Gardner Webb. I went to FAU. So we used to do recruiting trips together. Yes. And I knew how good he was, you know, with that. And like, he's excellent. How great he was. Oh, he's unbelievable. And then the associate head coach is funny. I was trying to get involved with the job, and I called Tom Palumbo and asked him if he would be interested or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was like, well, let's see, you know, if you can get involved. And, you know, we're talking about that. But the guy that's been to two Final Fours, that's one with no scholarships. There's one with no money that I might have to get rid of the whole staff because he can do all of this stuff. Because, I mean, because we talk about, he's had to do all of it.
Yeah, had to, no choice.
Yeah, and a guy like that to have, that you have to lean on, like, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Randy Peel, who I work for, I know, you know, he's relentless in everything he does. Like, I'm an SEC staff, so I can have more than, you know, my five. Yeah. I can have 10 on the staff, just like we do.
Hey,
so
no question. And you're right on par. Everybody we've asked, no one has yet given us four. Okay. Average about 7 to 9. So we're getting one guy last night, damn near 30. But no question. That's an unbelievable list and coach.
And you want guys you know and that you trust. And I think that's the biggest thing when you become a head coach. You're going to have to hire one or you don't know quite as well.
Yes.
But the one thing I came into this game and everyone said was like, man, be loyal.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a family, in a military family, where duty on our country, that was West Point. My dad beat that into our heads. So I want people who are not loyal to me because it's loyal to the program.
To a cause.
It's not about you as the head coach. I think, you know, people lose sight of that. Yeah. It's about us.
It is.
But at the end of the day, as my boss has told me many a times, if this play doesn't work, they're not crushing you in the press conference. They're coming after me. If this recruit's not very good, they're coming after me.
No question.
He's like, so it is us, but it's also on my head.
That's a great staff, coach, and I appreciate you sharing that. And you have great people around you that's imparted in you, and I know those guys, and that's phenomenal. You're humble enough to appreciate them. But yeah, you're right on par, man. That was about your top eight, but it's all good. Scott, it's on you.
So our last two segments, we're adding this one. And you know, in talking with coaches, this is something that, you know, as you listen to them, this is something that really sticks out to me.
Yeah.
Is what one coaching lesson that just stuck with you this entire time? And what is that lesson?
Yeah, there's two that go with this lesson because it's the same coach.
Okay.
And it was my first job as a graduate assistant with Dave Luce, who obviously, I mean, his name's on the court. It's 420 wins is in the rafters.
A lot of wins.
I mean, so unbelievable coach. And I'll never forget the first time he came, he was out on the road in September a ton, and the guys had to run on the track on a Friday. And we all met, and he was like, guys, I don't like being away from you all. And he goes, the most important recruits I have are the recruits that are on campus. And I never lost sight of that. Like we all, as an assistant, especially, you're like, man, I got to get that next guy. I got to get that next guy.
Yep.
Well, you need to take care of the guy you got there first.
No question.
Then you take care of getting that next guy. So that's one thing that really stuck with me a lot. And then another one I'll never forget, like we were good, but guys were kind of bickering and we had a fight. We had a fight. One of the dude body slammed one of the other guys on the court.
Right. Yep,
and so, real. And that was why they were on the road. And it was on like a Saturday, so I wasn't there this time.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was out of town. I came back, and so we had to address it. And he was like, guys, we're a family. He goes, the one thing about family is you love each other. You might not always like each other, but you're going to love each other.
That's good.
And he said, and he goes, y'all always love your parents? They're like, yeah. They're like, do you always like them? They're like, no. And he's like, well, exactly. That's no difference than what's going on with us right now. Like, we have to still love each other.
Yes, you do.
And we have to learn to grow from this and how this is going to make us better. And then obviously you two who got in the fight need to address this and be men and learn from it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was one of them who was like the least likely dude I ever thought would fight. But he was a competitor.
Right.
And they got under each other's skin and, you know, and after that, they were best friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all my best friends that I played with were the ones that I went to war with.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't the guys that just sat over there and didn't compete. I didn't want to talk to them. So I think those are two of the big lessons that I learned. And I want to give one more that my dad always taught me.
There you go.
And he retired as a lieutenant colonel in the Army.
Well, thank you.
And the colonel who he basically was his mentor, Colonel Oakes, he told him, he goes, whenever you speak to your soldiers, imagine their parents are behind them.
Mm.
And that's how you speak to them. He goes, even when you feel like you want to say things, he goes, just think about that. And he goes, you might use language that's colorful even if their parents are there.
Right.
He goes, but always think about that. They have parents. You're their parent right now.
Yeah.
And he's like, always think about that. And so like there's times when I was younger, now that I'm older, like I have kids, I understand. Like you might say some choice words, but you're not going to be ever disrespectful because that's someone's child.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's good. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
That's a great one. That was a great, great one. So now we get to the fun part.
Yeah.
So we call this segment Coaches Anonymous. So not like we need rehab, because we all know coaches need some type of rehab. But the story about an anonymous coach from practice, from the recruiting trails, if it's past the statute of limitations, you can say his name.
Yeah.
If not, you want to keep him anonymous. We just call everybody coach.
Yes.
Yeah. I give this one, and I love them with all my heart. But I'll never forget this as long as I live. And the former players always bring it up to me, and they die laughing about it all the time. We're playing at a school. I won't even say their name because they'll give a little too many of the details away. And we're up big. We're up by like 20. And we're having an okay year. We were just okay. And one of the guys just starts taking some crazy shots and doing his own thing. And he subs them out. And then he starts cussing them out and like starts yelling. Well, our AD is on the road trip with the assistant AD right behind us. Like, and this is not a very big place. Like they could hear everything. And our coach, for some reason, just snapped. And he was just frustrated and he lost it. And he's going crazy. And like, I mean, he started losing his mind.
Right.
And so I had to like calm him down and he's trying to yell at me. And finally we end up winning by like 15. Like we end up, it's crazy. We go to the locker room. He just starts losing his mind in there. And he starts punching he's punching the lockers. He's about to dent it. And I just like, yo, coach, like, stop. Like, this isn't our locker room. And then he just turns around as fast as can be. And I won't say the word. He says, F you with all due respect. And like, and that was right after Ricky Bobby and all that came out. Where he's like, with all due respect. And I turned and the whole team's head goes, and looks at me. And I'm like this. I'm trying not to laugh, like, because they're all dying laughing.
Yeah.
And I just turned and I was like this, man, I don't know what to say right now. I just said, all right, man. I said, we need to get on the bus.
With all due respect.
But, and he said it like, F you, you know, with some power too. And then he was like, but with all due respect, like nicely, like right after. I said, man, I'm done. I said, I can't do this. And our guys will still, they'll send me a text like, F you, coach, with all due respect.
Oh, that's great. Oh, man.
And I love him to death. He just had one of those moments where he lost a little control.
It's called aggressive counseling. I've been there
myself. Oh, man. And I just like this. And I was young, and I was I was trying to make you not break the locker so we didn't get charged for it.
Ricky Bobby moment.
I looked at our budget. I know what our budget is. We couldn't afford to fix that locker.
Hey, Coach, this not a locker room, man. Not a locker room.
Yeah.
I've had one of those quick.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Coach, we definitely appreciate your time. It was a great episode. Great to hear your story and the lessons you've learned along the way. And Coach Key, any final words?
Again, thank you. Just amazing to see your matriculation and humility from D3 to SEC. And I don't know if you read the small print, but part of our fee is a T-shirt. It could be dry fit. I wear large. He wears a large. We'll text you the address, and hopefully we'll do it again. As this show continues to grow, we'll hopefully one day get a chance to travel a little bit, come to you. But we're excited for you. Want to follow you on your role is emphatically important to LSU. And again, I wear large. And Coach, are you XL, Coach?
See, he's trying to make me bigger than I am. I'm still squeezing into a large.
Right? Okay. Gotcha.
Extra medium. He likes them tight. Come on, man. He's wearing extra medium. Yeah. I want to thank you guys for having me on here. You know, it means a lot. Two guys that I came up with in this game, you know, that obviously you were at A&T, you were at Greensboro College, then A&T. The guys that we're out grinding on the road, that we were just learning ourselves, young pups.
Yep.
And now, you know, we're these mature, refined adults that we are right
now.
It's crazy. And the fact that, you know, you guys are still involved in the game and you give back to the game, like, that means everything to all of us. That's why we got in this business.
Yes.
We want to give back to someone who gave to us.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely. I just want to thank you guys for doing that.
Wow. Oh, man. Again, we appreciate it. And we look forward to doing this again, hopefully in person somewhere along the road.
I'll get you some gumbo and jambalaya when you come. And you got a Michelob Ultra. That's like the drink of Louisiana. So,
and make sure you're eating that crawfish correctly now. You got to squeeze your head and pull, my man.
You know, I know. I learned.
Appreciate you, Coach. Sounds good.
You take care, and we'll see you on the road.
Well, Lars.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Another great episode of Life on the Road. This time, our guest, Tim Kaine, assistant coach at LSU, and amazing stories about his journey and the lessons he learned along the way, especially that lesson he learned from his dad, which really stuck out to me. Coach Key, any final words?
Well, just how everything is all encompassed as far as leadership. We talk about coaching, life on the road, but it kind of exudes out to parents, role models, and just, you know, we're all coaches at one point of our life. So I really enjoyed how he mixed his professional growth and learning abilities to what he learned from his father and learned from other role models. Pretty phenomenal today.
All right, Coach Key, take us away.
Until next time, Scott, keep it on the road.
And keep it between the lines. We want to thank you for your continued support of the Life on the Road podcast. Please comment on each episode and give us that 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast. And make sure you hit the follow button so you don't miss an episode. You can also watch all the episodes on our YouTube page and follow us on social media at Coach AKSB. Thanks again to all of our guests and listeners. This wouldn't be possible without you.